Campus FM presents Talking Eds, a program brought to you by students from the International Masters in Adult Education for Social Change, who are studying currently at the University of Malta.
Hello and welcome to Talking Eds today. Our program is going to be on policy in education, and I'm your host Zainab Saeed Saad with two guests in the studio. Preeti from India. She has experience and interest in working with women and marginalized groups in India. And I have Song Han from China, who has experience also working with ethnic minorities and marginalized groups in China. So I welcome both of you.
Thank you.
Welcome. Adult education policies are very crucial because they form the backbone of any educational intervention program. So what can you highlight to us about the importance of such kind of policies, whether global or international or local policies? How important are policies in education?
So I think in general, policy of adult education should be a guidance that coordinates all the factors and integrate all the social resources to serve the development of adult education. And this is crucial to guide the society or all the factors so that it can effectively coordinate with each other to serve the purpose of the development.
Okay. What about Preeti? Can you highlight anything on the importance of policy?
Yes. So I was thinking that it's every individual's responsibility to learn throughout life. But adult education policies are particularly important because it puts the pressure on the governments and international organizations to take the responsibility for educations of the adults. In our consumer societies, this is what's happening now. Like, governments are telling people that it's your responsibility if you are educating yourselves throughout life, but lifelong learning policies and adult education policies are bringing back the role of state into this whole concept. So that's why I think it's national education policies and international lifelong learning policies are very important for the nation state and for the whole world.
Definitely, I agree with you, because like UNESCO is trying to, has always been working towards pushing policies for not only for education in general, but also for adult education. For example, if you look at the Education for All strategy that was devised in the 1990s in the Jomtien Convention in Dakar, that policy actually spoke about the whole spectrum of education, children, youths, and adults. But later on, when you go to countries, like the reports that were collected from different countries, they found that when it came to the implementation, actually the adults were not really included. Mm-hmm. So the policy is very comprehensive, that it includes the adults because they are very important as well. But when you come on terms on ground, the adults are not really there. As you've said, so many market-driven countries are not really putting in a lot of finance into the adult education because they might think it's not going to be bring any return. And likewise, also the World Bank, which also subscribes somehow to the theory of lifelong learning, they've also withdrew some of their fundings for adult education programs. So many countries, even though they've signed onto this Jomtien Convention, you know, the EFA goals are education for all, sometimes it's education for everybody except for the adults, because when you go on ground, they don't really make those provisions which are really taking the adults on board. So I believe, yes, policy is very important, but policy alone cannot solve the problems of adult education. So also in terms of adult education itself, we have different meanings across the globe of what is adult education. For example, in my context in Nigeria, if you go to Nigeria and you speak about adult education, it's like automatically you are talking about the non-formal aspect of adult education, which deals mostly with literacy skills of the mass, the generality of the population. I don't know, like in China, what does adult education means?
Well, if you ask an average Chinese, what adult education means in China, he would say it's like go to the vocational school or get training to get some skill and one certificate, or go to the adult higher institution. So basically it's like a formal education in terms of the adult education. And it came also with a very deep cultural and historic reason, because that we used to have like 100 years ago we established the imperial examination system, so that the country can select the talent through the exam. And we used to have to say that there is only one decent job to do, is to study instead of being a artist or some other kind of job. That the only decent job is that, and that's why we people in China have this cultural tradition of value a lot on the formality, and that's why formal education is so important in China instead of non-formal.
Okay, I think even in Nigeria we have what we call the all adult education just simply means adult learning, mm-hmm. but how it's been applied in countries just varies. In Nigeria, when you talk about formal education, they have a separate ministry that takes care of that, you know. It's the General Ministry of Education in Nigeria, but for the adult education, they have the the National Commission for Mass Literacy, Adult and Non-Formal Education. That is a separate commission that takes care of the non-formal education. So actually, yes, adult education can meet both formal and non-formal, but in Nigeria, adult education is referred to non-formal, mm-hmm. while the formal adult education is called higher institution or tertiary education. You know, so what about Preeti? What system do you have in India?
Yeah, so I was thinking while you were talking that I think that one very important aspect of this is that there's this stigma attached to formal education of adults. Like, for example, in my country, I've never seen some adult over the age of 50 studying with us in our university. Mm-hmm. Whereas while we were in Glasgow, in University of Glasgow, we have seen that people who are over the age of 40, 50, 60, they were studying with us. And some people can always question what's the point of studying at that later stage. Like, why do you want to earn a degree, formal degree at that stage? But it's for their own personal development and also professional development. And in our countries like India, China and Nigeria that we are talking about now, we have all these non-formal educations like vocational training or computer related trainings, because we think it's only related to earning the living. So if I am somebody who has been working for 20 years and now I feel that I need to learn the new technologies that has come in this new world to compete with the youth, I would go to a vocational school and learn in maybe a formal or non-formal way, but I would not get a degree I would not enroll myself to get a degree in a proper university. So I think that's the first difference. And the second difference, as you were talking earlier, that we also have in India, we have a lot of policies like National Literacy Mission, National Policy of Education, which came out in late 80s and early 90s. But of course, they focus more on primary education because there are higher returns coming from children. Like if you are educating people over the age of 60, what return can you get? And if you compare those returns to the students who are like 15 or 18 years of age. So that's why governments are focusing a lot more on primary and secondary education and not on adult education. But I think that's why we need to make people aware that adult education is also important, and governments should focus more on adult education, and not just in terms of policies, because we all know there are a lot of policies in terms of implementation as well.
Definitely. I think I can relate to something you said. Like in our countries as well, like in Africa generally, I should say particularly in Nigeria where I come from, you will not find adults, you know, as you said, above the age of maybe, let's say, 45, you know, going back to university to earn degrees. It has to be something that the government maybe has made it mandatory, because I remember when the government was trying to re-strategize the teaching sector, they actually found out that a lot of the teachers were not really qualified. They were not really trained in education before they started teaching. They just had normal degrees like, let's say, physics, chemistry, but there wasn't an educational component. So they actually made it mandatory for all the teachers that did not have education as any of their disciplines on their undergraduate degrees or, you know, their diplomas, they should go back to university and get what they call an advanced diploma in education. So I think that was what actually triggered people of such age groups, you know, to go back to universities. So as you've said, there's no encouragement coming from governments when you reach a certain age to go back to school, unless in such kind of situations where they are trying to clean the system to make teachers more effective, and effectiveness starts from the quality of your teachers. But I think one thing I've observed is, and I think the European countries are very much trying to really look at the lifelong learning as it is, give it every bit of the lifelong learning importance, which is the informal education, the non-formal education, and the formal education across every spectrum, children, youth, and adults in all these three sectors. Because you find out that they have very good formal schools for everybody, they have higher institutions, they have non-formal schools for adults as well. And also one thing that very much interested me when I came to learn now is the University of the Third Age. This is a very, very important concept. You know, that is a school specifically for adults, even if they are not getting like some kind of certification, but still they are learning. And this learning has a kind of different impact in people's lives. This is why some people actually make a difference between education and schooling. They said that the EFA goals themselves, some countries have actually mistook education for schooling. Mm-hmm. Education can be obtained anywhere. That's why you can be educated informally, non-formally, or formally. But people thought education is just schooling. That's why some countries are really focusing on the formal sector at the expense of non-formal and informal sector. I don't know if any of you have witnessed such thing, like in Glasgow or here in Malta. Like, what are your experiences? Have you witnessed anywhere where there are such provisions available, like in the three aspects?
Yeah, I always feel like there's this difference between literacy and education, which we don't understand. And when there are a lot of adult education policies made internationally or nationally, they just focus on the formal aspect of education. So the when there is this program going on, let's say in a village there is this program going on, and they focus only on the literacy of 3 hours, which is like reading, writing, and mathematics, without understanding the needs of the learner. So the learners might not be interested in learning those literacy skills, but they might want to learn something else. Like if they are in the field of agriculture, they want to learn about the pesticides, their fields, and, you know, and everything else. But I mean, I've mentioned this earlier in another program also, because I feel very strongly about it. Like, why do we always focus on literacy? And there are different sorts of literacy. There is functional literacy, like simple literacy of 3 hours. So that's a difference I feel like we need to recognize before implementing those policies of adult education.
That I agree, because when I think about my some job I've done in Tibet, I realize that sometimes functional literacy is important, but beyond that, we should let the local community to decide what they want to learn, instead of patronizing and give them some curriculum for them to learn, because they know what they need and they know what they are interested in, that is useful for their life, instead of just narrow from what you offered.
Can you give us an example of some of the things you've noticed, like in Tibet?
Well, originally our plan was to, you know, establish a multifunctional educational center and to help them go beyond a little bit beyond the functional literacy and something like literature, music, sort of things. But gradually we realized that is what the people want. What people are more interested in is related to their own daily life. Like currently we have some like e-commerce all around China. The local of Tibet will be more interested in how to acquire the skill to imply it to this business making, and they want to learn skill in computer science and some basic knowledge of how to do start a business online.
So both of you, as Preeti has mentioned an example from India, from the rural areas, and you have mentioned your example in Tibet, you are just trying to say that sometimes the policies, if I get what you are saying, right, that don't take along the needs of the people. Mm-hmm. So does that bring us to the needs of need assessment before any policy is being created?
Absolutely.
You think
yes.
So?
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine. Then we have to take a break now. Then we'll come back on the same theme. Thank you. Thank you for listening. We are back from our break with Preeti and Song Han from India and China respectively. So we were discussing the importance of government including the voices of people before policies are being created on education, because if governments want to come up with policies that will succeed, it has to take recognition of the needs of the masses on who that policy is going to be rolled on. So, Preeti, can you give us some insights into this importance of these needs assessments before policies are being made?
Okay, so I always feel like need assessment is very important before development of any adult education policies for people. To give you another example, if there's a family who is struggling to survive, and if government implements an adult education policies for them and asks both the parents of the family to go and attend the classes, of course those parents cannot afford it because they have to go to their services, they have to earn a living for themselves and for their children. Instead of implementing the literacy, if they give them a chance to go to vocational classes, let's say in the night vocational classes, the female can go there and learn the bakery skills or sewing skills or something else which will help her in earning a living or improving their standard or economic condition. It would be more help for her. Yeah, and also vice versa for the male. If the male is doing some, let's say, he is working in a factory and you are telling him to go and learn about the 3 hours in the evening, he might not be interested in it because he cannot afford it. He's tired at the end of the day. He is more busy thinking about the living for his family. So if we are telling him how to operate a heavy machinery or something like that, like in an educational program, that might actually be helpful for him professionally because he can go back to his factory and improve his condition or level within the factory. So I think that's how, you know, it should work.
So basically what you are trying to say is that government should speak to people and determine the needs of the people before they promulgate any kind of policy, because they might actually be creating educational policies for programs, because educational policies definitely underline programs. They are the backbone of educational intervention programs. But at the end of the day, they might not really work on ground because the policies might have been created with a different objective, mm-hmm. while the person who is being targeted has a different objective as well. So there's a clash of objectives.
Yes, and that's why there's this difference between policies in Western world and Eastern world, mm-hmm. because the Western world has already achieved the literacy level, mm-hmm. so they don't focus on the literacy and then they implement the policies according to their people. Like if somebody wants to go back to the university, how should policy should affect him or her? But in the Eastern countries, we still haven't achieved literacy level, so that's why governments usually focus on literacy. But that's like, this is one aspect of reality, but there's another aspect of reality that only literacy will not help people in their whole lives or in earning their livelihoods. That's why the governments have to understand that we do not need to follow the Western model. We do not need to first achieve the literacy level and then go to the vocational skills and technological skills. We can go side by side. We can do both the things concurrently, or we can just make the policies according to the basic needs of people.
What do you think, Song Han?
I think pretty elaborated in full and detail, and I just want to add one thing. So when it comes to generally policy making, especially as I come from the communist part of China, and it used to be very centralized when it comes to policy making, and there is like one general policy that applies for different regions.
One size fits all kind of mm-hmm. strategy.
Yeah, so that's actually it does not help solving the problem. Instead, it enhances the disparity among regions. So just around one decade ago, they started to delegate the power to a lower level, and the situation is now kind of improving.
Okay, like some kind of decentralization of mm-hmm. educational like policy making.
Yeah, you should give power to the lower level.
Okay, that's good then. I actually like it when you bring up this discussion about, actually Preeti also raised the issue of, actually when it comes to policy, countries like the third world countries or the developing countries actually adopt the whole model from the Western countries. Mm-hmm. You know, when you talk about adoption, you are meaning taking the whole chunk of the whole ideas. But people need to adapt. Adapt means you have to take what fits your system. For the other parts that do not fit your own context, you have to create, you know, strategies based on your own context that fit your own context. Because yes, as Priti has mentioned, I see a lot of problem in that. I would like to mention is this currently, like the Western world, when you look at usually like adult education, most countries are focusing on the economic aspect of adult education, you know, those that can bring rate of return. That's why there's a lot of issues on vocational training, you know, training for the workplace, you know, skills upgrade, skills updating. There's nothing wrong with that, but at the end of the day, in our countries, when we have adopted that kind of model, it has actually robbed us of a lot of things. First of all, the literacy itself, we are not yet up to that level. Mm-hmm. In Nigeria, we still have millions of people that are still not literate. So our weight should still be heavily on making people literate. But I still agree with what Priti is saying. Functional literacy alone is not enough to empower people. I did my thesis on HIV/AIDS. In a school, it was a chain schools for women. But when I look at the curriculum, they were teaching them just basic skills of what is HIV, you know, the epidemiological side of it, what is HIV, how do you transmit it. But they didn't put it in the context of the society. This is a society where there's a lot of polygamy going on, and people are not even thinking of HIV testing. You know, it's not the norm for people when they want to get married to go for HIV testing. Then I was thinking, how do women protect themselves if they are in a polygamous situation when their husband wants to take maybe, let's say, a third wife? How do the rest of the women in the house know what is happening? You know, how will they do? In the curriculum, there's nothing that looks at the problems in the social context. So how will people be empowered when you don't know, for example, in this example I gave, when the women already married to the man, let's say two or three, don't know how that they have the right to request for him to get the other wife to be tested so that they feel safe when she's coming in? What is education doing for them? Because they don't even know where their right is. They don't really know how to get their rights. When people have problems, they don't know how to go to the courts. They don't even know which courts to go to, because we have two types of courts. We have, or I should say three, there's our customary laws, we have the Islamic courts, we have the Western courts, which we call the normal legal system. You know, so people are confused, you know. So I don't think, as you said, literacy, just teaching reading, writing and arithmetic, will make people empowered. People don't know about their rights. They don't know how to get their rights. They don't have information about health issues and things like that. So I think focusing on literacy alone is very restrictive in terms of empowering people.
Yeah, I mean, you made a very good point that we need to understand that all these social, cultural and geographical issues intersect each other. So there's this intersectionality that exists within all these issues. So nothing exists in isolation. Like when we're talking about adult education, we also have to talk about the education which makes people aware about the social issues that are going within the society. So we had this another example where in this southern state of India, women, when they got together for this adult education classes, they started talking about the social issues that were going within the society. And then they organized this campaign against this arak, which is like country liquor, which is very poisonous for everybody. And government does not do anything against it because there's no case against it. And government takes no responsibility for it. And then these women, when they were talking amongst each other, they came together for these classes. They arranged this program where they organized the campaigns against the people who were selling it everywhere, and the whole movement took place on a larger level. And at the end, government was forced to make policies against those country liquor, which was very poisonous for the people. This is just an example which tells us that adult literacy also talks about social issues and other issues which are going on, you know, within the cultural or, you know, social societies. And it's not just about the literacy or about vocational skills, because if we don't have food to eat, we cannot think about education. Mm-hmm. That's the basic thing. That's what Maslow talks about in his hierarchy of needs.
Yes, and I think what you talked about, the intersectionality, I think captures the crux of the matter, because this is what Freire talks about, reading the world and the word. Reading the word and the world. You get my point? You cannot just read the word in, you know, by disengaging from the world. It has to be read the word in the world. You know, what is happening in around you, in your context. You have to learn to be literate based on the problems surrounding you in your own context. I find that very important. But in the non-formal education sector in Nigeria, we already have a component that captures that, which is called the life skill dimension, which trains people, you know, in conflict management, you know, communication skills, interpersonal skills, how to solve problems in your daily life. But when you go down to the schools, you don't see that. You just see the basic three literacy, you know, 3 R's, and, you know, some of the information about health and things like that. If you go down and scrutinize the curriculum, it's still at the basic level. They don't really put it together with the social issues and try to come up with solutions to problem facing people. So what do you think, Song Han?
Well, I think, back to the point, when it comes to policy making, of course, we need to have one leg in the community and one leg in the government. And of course, we should also take into the local culture into consideration, as I said. And again, take China, for example, the culture that is over obsessed of formality. And then when we come to the policy reform, we like transplant what South Korea has, the credit bank system, which is happening, underestimating right now, but about to happen. That is, you know, a way to integrate both non-formal and the formal sector so that it can be a good way to, you know, give more saying in from the non-formal part of the education field and combine it together.
Oh, that's very interesting. So basically, our discussion has been on the policies of adult education, the importance of such policies, because these policies form the backbone of any educational intervention program or any educational strategy, whether international, national, or locally. But a crucial aspect of these policies, as we have just discussed, is the governments to take along the cultures of people, the society, the cultural differences, the context itself in trying to create or adapt or adopt these policies, because that is the best way to ensure that the needs of the society on which these policies are going to be unleashed are really taken into the consideration, and hopefully there will be more success in implementation of such kind of programs, whether formal, non-formal, or informal education. So we have to wrap up here. Thank you to our panel, Preeti, Song Han, and our technician, Samuel. The series Talking Eds is available online at MaltaUniversityBroadcasting.com. Thank you for listening, and goodbye.